When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.
Welcome to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca, and I'm a Bengals fan for life. All right, in this episode, we're going to welcome in draft expert Corey O'Neill. He's going to talk about the first 10 picks of the 2024 NFL Draft, and he's also going to talk about who the Bengals and the Eagles are going to take in the first round.
What's up, guys? This is Evan McPherson, and you're listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast would like to welcome, from the Greased Pole Podcast, Corey O'Neill.
All right, I'm really excited for this next guest, and it's a once-in-a-year thing, but this year we're playing his team. One of the OGs, when I started this podcast, he was starting his, and we both just became friends instantly. We believed in what each other was doing, and it's been a great friendship since then and a great professional relationship. And with that said, I would like to welcome Philadelphia Eagles fan and expert, draft expert, and host of the Greased Pole Podcast, Corey O'Neill. Corey, how are you today?
Frank, it's always good to hear your voice. It's always good to join you and your listeners, man, talk draft with you, talk shop. It's that time of year. This is always one of my favorite nights of the year, man, when I get to join you and talk some draft with you.
What we'll do is we'll run through the first 10 picks, and then we'll run through what you think the Bengals and the Eagles will do in the first round. So with that said, with the Bears on the clock, I know this isn't a real mystery, but we'll start there. What are you saying, pick one, Chicago Bears?
We all know it's going to be Caleb Williams, quarterback, USC, rather. He's not in an octagon. The main thing I like here is just the move by Bears GM Ryan Poles to get this pick from Carolina last year in exchange for Bryce Young. You know, I mean, because Williams he's one of those guys who's been a lot of hype around. He's in that kind of Trevor Lawrence type category where you've had teams fired up in advance to try to land him. So it's not the same Bears roster that it once looked like Caleb Williams was going to land on. You've got DeAndre Swift in the backfield now, Keenan Allen, he's old and made a peanut brittle, but you've got somebody else there to go with DJ Moore. Suddenly, the NFC North is loaded and interesting, and the Bears finally have something they can work with and not a complete tire fire anymore. So Caleb Williams to the Bears first overall, obviously.
I hear you on that. And what do you think of the rumblings about him where, you know, people are saying that he's a little bit flaky? And I think there was talk he wanted ownership. He was going to refuse to go to Chicago. Is that all just media gossip, or is there any validity to the fact that he may be a little unhinged?
I think it's one of those things, man, where if there's smoke, there's at least a little bit of fire. I heard the ownership thing too, which seems a little egregious. The reality is, though, is this is one of these things that you could see prospects doing even more now just because of the new – I mean, you got college players making, you know, these NIL deals now, which I'm not against. Get your money, get the bag. But it's a different era we're living in now. You know, Eli Manning and John Elway got kind of ostracized for doing what they did years ago. So this is kind of like a different version of that almost, you know. I remember seeing that Caleb Williams paints his fingernails, so – you know, that became a story. And while that's not my thing, I don't really care if my quarterback paints his nails. I don't give a damn what he does. As long as he has like a 70% completion percentage, I'm good. You can paint your nails, do whatever you want to do. You know what I mean? So Caleb Williams has the talent. You know, it's just a question of how much is those things, or are those things rather, going to outweigh the talent he has? Can he find that balance at the NFL level with Chicago?
Yeah, well put. I mean, you're going to have to deal with the Bears more than I will because they're in your conference. Let's move on to pick number two. What do you think the Commanders are going to do there?
I've got them going Jaden Daniels, quarterback out of LSU, reigning Heisman Trophy winner. I think this is a pretty popular pick. You know, former Arizona State head coach Herm Edwards, who recruited him to Tempe, before he transferred to Baton Rouge, compared him to Randall Cunningham for whatever that's worth. I'm not a big comp guy, but there's that. He's a very smart player. He's got a high football IQ. You'll see him also, you know, you think of him and the running ability that Jaden Daniels has, but he can also go through his progressions in the pocket. Completed 72% of his passes this past season. That deep ball needs a little bit of work, and he's going to grow into his body so he won't be as slender. We've seen typical Washington this offseason, right? You spend a ton of money in free agency. You add, like, Austin Eckler. If you add this weapon at quarterback that's as intelligent as Jaden Daniels is to go along with Scary Terry, Jahan Dotson, it's exciting if you're a Commanders fan, especially after some of the additions on defense they brought in as well, like Frankie Louvu, Jeremy Chin. New ownership. They're in my division, so I'm not rooting for this, but there's a rare sense of optimism around the Commanders. So I think it's going to be Jaden Daniels in two.
Fair enough. What are you thinking at three for New England?
Drake May, quarterback out of North Carolina. I can see New England possibly taking Marvin Harrison Jr. here. You know, they just took Mac Jones in the first round recently, and he had nothing to work with. But Belichick's not there anymore in the receiver class that will see guys there early in the second round. You've got a Ladd McConkey out of Georgia. I think he goes in the first, but a Keon Coleman out of Florida State. You've got to take the quarterback here. And May had a much better 2022 campaign than he's coming off of now entering the draft, but he's got all those intangibles you want at the quarterback position. He's kind of the prototype at quarterback amongst his class, and what you'll notice with him that he needs improvement on at the next level are all things you can fix, like the bad decisions that led to some picks. You've got Alex Van Pelt there as a new offensive coordinator in New England, Ben McAdoo as well, who became kind of a punchline, but you've got over three decades of experience in a new regime in Foxborough with Gerard Mayo at the helm. Get your quarterback here and address the position, the perimeter later on in the draft.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think based on them, you know, rotating quarterbacks last year and Jones really not panning out, that they have to try something new. And it makes sense, you know, you bring in the new coach and the new quarterback at the same time, and hopefully, you know, you build. I mean, I'm not rooting for them to build something, but that would be the mentality, is to have those two pieces in place and, you know, build your future dynasty.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, what are you if you're New England? After all, you've had Brady for 20 years. You really gonna get fired up about Bailey Zappi? Come on.
What do you think in number four with Arizona?
So this is a spot where you could see. I know we're not doing trades. I don't know if Arizona stays here. Minnesota is more than likely going to make a move up. I think this is a possible spot where it could happen. But if the Cardinals do stay put, I think it's Marvin Harrison Jr., wide receiver out of Ohio State. The Cardinals were a pesky team last year. This was a tough football team, but you can't expect, like, Greg Dortch to hold it down at wide receiver. All due respect for him. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the most anticipated receiver prospect we've seen in years after, you know, tip of the cap to you and your listeners, Jamar Chase in 2021. You probably have to go back to maybe like Sammy Watkins in 2014 to find a guy that was this anticipated on the perimeter. He's got that NFL pedigree. His pops is an NFL Hall of Famer. He does everything well. He runs great. He's got sudden routes, the great hands, the ball skills. He's great at adjusting his body to throws. He's a high-volume target that you want is that true wide receiver one, and he'll allow last year's second-rounder, Michael Wilson, an opportunity to flourish on the boundary as well. If you're an organization like the Cardinals, you had Larry Fitzgerald for almost two decades. This is the perfect guy to fill the void on the outside for Arizona.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And because Kyler Murray, you know, we all kind of were throwing him in the dumpster, and then he started coming on a little bit last year. So it's like, you know what, get him another weapon. They're paying him enough money. They might as well continue that experiment. I guess the next team here is going to be hoping that the Vikings trade up and grab a quarterback, because then they would be able to get Harrison. This is a team that lost both of their starting wide receivers, and Harrison would be the perfect fit there. But, you know, regardless of a trade, Arizona picking, all the scenarios, what do you think the Chargers are going to do at number five?
Marvin Harrison Jr. with Justin Herbert would be a blast. So I echo everything that you just said. I hope the Vikings trade up so that can happen, because that would be amazing. Here I've got him going Malik Nabers, though, wide receiver out of LSU, who there's a couple people that think he's better or will project better at the NFL level than Marvin Harrison Jr. I think Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers could go multiple directions here. 2 months ago, I had Brock Bowers, tight end out of Georgia, locked in the spot. possibly O-lineman to bookend Rashawn Slater. But to your point, you got Keenan Allen and Mike Williams both gone. Quentin Johnson didn't show nearly enough as a rookie. Josh Palmer's a piece. But Neighbors is going to give Justin Herbert that bona fide wide receiver one that he desperately needs. He's that burner that's going to take the top off the defense for you. He's explosive off of the snap all the way up into the whistle with elite hands. He's got that ability to grab and go and get that yak yardage that we all love so much. He's going to go up and get those top shelf balls for you. He's a tough 6 foot and 200 pounds. He doesn't have the polish that you want throughout the route tree just yet in the top five pick, but everything else is there. And with a guy like Justin Herbert, now when you look at the other teams in the AFC West, you possibly have that best weapon on the perimeter in the division with Neighbors.
Yeah, I agree there. And, you know, every, I guess, Batman needs his Robin. You know, you have Burrow throwing to Chase. I guess yep. This would be the equivalent of Herbert getting his Chase, which, even though, you know, Keenan Allen's been a great pro, it still wasn't that kind of chemistry. And obviously, if there was, he still, you know, he would still be with the Chargers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Neighbors, either Neighbors or Harrison Jr. here, because Justin Herbert's, I mean, he's got all the talent in the world, man. I mean, we've seen it. And it just didn't click last year. You know what I mean? Either one of those guys would help him a ton, obviously.
All right, so let's move on to the sixth pick in the draft. And if you're in the New York market, as I am, this is all you're hearing about. What are the Giants going to do? Everyone's saying they're not going to stick with Daniel Jones. They're going to go for a quarterback. They're going to trade up. Some people are saying they need more weapons, get a wide receiver. In this market, it's just a big mystery on what they're going to do with that pick. Corey, what do you think the Giants are doing at six?
I've got them. We had three QBs to start the draft. Three wide receivers are going to make a run here. After that, I've got Roma Dunze, wide receiver out of Washington. I see the argument for quarterback. I can see everything you just said. But to me, with Daniel Jones's contract, I think you give him another year where you actually give him somebody to throw to and then go from there and kind of assess what he's able to do when he's got, you know, somebody out there to work with. There's a lot of unknowns for the Giants on the outside, right? Like, I love the Jalin Hyatt pick last year. Wandale Robinson's a guy they spent a high draft pick on in 2022, but he's been injured so often. Odunze would give the Giants that top-end talent on the perimeter that's got good size for an NFL-level wide receiver one. He's 6'3", 212 pounds. Just like Marvin Harrison Jr., he's not a burner, but he creates separation as well as anybody, and he can use his frame against defenders if he's in a tight window to get those 50-50 balls. He's excellent at tracking the ball in the air to get himself in position to make a play. He's a day one starter anywhere he goes. I think he's got a high floor in this draft as well as an NFL player, and he gives the Giants offense a necessary shot in the arm.
Three quarterbacks, three wide receivers in the top six. And, you know, after analyzing, you know, what goes on in the drafts, you think about it, the perimeter is where all the big money goes and all the high picks go. You know, it's defensive ends, it's yep. corners, it's receivers. Obviously, quarterback is just going to trump everything. But then you have sure. the middle of the field. Like, guards don't get picked high. Centers, linebackers, defensive tackles. Okay, that's an exception as well. Safeties. You know, it's like the guys on the perimeter, I guess they have longer careers because there's less firepower out there. And it's definitely more premium positions, as we talked about. I mean, defensive ends and corners are going to certainly get more money than linebackers and safeties.
Yeah, and it's weird because, I mean, you think, just look 20, 30 years ago at, I mean, linebacker was one of those positions like you had to have. You know, Lawrence Taylor, your Ray Lewis's, your Brian Urlacher's. I mean, even to take it back even way before them, Ray Nitschke, Dick Butkus, guys like that, Chuck Bednarik, if you're, you know, an Eagles fan. I mean, you had to have that guy. You had to have that anchor in the middle of your defense. And now, to your point, it's a complete opposite. I mean, you might not see a linebacker drafted until late in the first round, if even at all. And now you have these edge/linebacker hybrid dudes that are kind of linebackers, but not really. You line them up on the line of scrimmage, so they're more of a DN. It's crazy how things have changed, for sure, because if you're our age, you grew up, you needed that linebacker to anchor your defense. And now you can get by with having just some average dudes out there.
Yeah, and when you said perimeter before, that's what jarred this whole conversation. And if you want to even take it a step further, the positions that I'm talking about that don't pay well, linebacker, safety, running back, those are all high collision positions. You know, those are the guys that are pounding every down on each other. And, you know, at high speeds, you know, when you're coming from the second level and meeting a guy who's coming from the second level, that's about as high of a collision as you're going to get, you know, aside from a wide receiver getting his head taken off. But, you know, the rules protect against that. But on an every down basis, the running backs are basically, you know, driving a car into a brick wall, and so are the linebackers and the safeties.
Yeah, and it's funny because for me, Brian Dawkins, right? I mean, and, you know, that same era, Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu, even going back before that, Ronnie Lott. I mean, there's still something about a safety and a defense that gets me excited, and I think that's probably an age thing. There might be a 15-year-old listening to this going, dude, what the hell are you talking about? Because you'll have first rounds go. Every year, there's a safety. When I watch tape on all these dudes, every year there's a safety in the draft that I absolutely fall in love with. And they don't usually hear their name called until the second or third round sometimes. You know, last year for us, Sidney Brown, I didn't know we were going to draft him. Sidney Brown for Illinois was one of them. And then we ended up taking him in the third round. And I'm going, Jesus, I mean, this guy, you know, I would have taken him before then. It's a positional priority thing, and it's crazy to see the way the game has changed. And it's, you know, the betting, and it's all about those points now. That's what they care about. You know, it's how many dollars can you generate?
Great point. And I know we're digressing from actually picking, you know, who's going to go where in the draft, but this is definitely a valuable conversation. And on top of it, I've always thought about this. If I had to go into a dark alley, a troublesome alley, Brian Dawkins would be one of the people that I want in that alley with me.
Oh, 1,000%. He'd be speaking in tongues and he wouldn't curse. He doesn't curse. But he's terrifying, man. And I'm not just saying that as an Eagles fan. I mean, Ed Reed, too. Pick any of them. I mean, safety was an intimidating position. Those are the guys that are coming up to lower the boom on you. You know, to your point, that's the high collision position. That's what it's there for. And you don't see a whole lot of those guys anymore.
I hear you on that, my friend. Let's move on to the seventh pick. What do you think the Titans are going to do there?
I've got Tennessee going with Joe Alt, offensive tackle out of Notre Dame. And I like Will Levis a lot. They've added Calvin Ridley to go along with an aging DeAndre Hopkins, 2022 first round of Treylon Burks. Now, you've got D-Hop is 31. His best days are behind him. Burks is young. So the cupboard isn't bare there, and the top three wide receivers are off the board. So I think if I'm GM, Titans GM Rand Carthen, offensive line, the trenches make the most sense to me. I like Will Levis. Keep him protected. Peter Skoronski was one of my favorite players in the draft last year, and he was an absolute home run for Tennessee. They just paid Lloyd Cushenberry $50 million, $30 million guaranteed to come over from Denver over 4 years at center. And as tough as Levis is, you've got to have more on that offensive line than just one or two dudes. You can't have a bunch of turnstiles out there, and that's where Joe Alt fits the bill perfectly. He's another guy with an NFL bloodline. His old man was a first-round pick of the Chiefs back in 1984. He's huge, 6'9", 320 pounds, 34-inch arms. He packs a nice punch in pass pro, and he's got great footwork and quickness to get to the second level and finish in the running game, which new running back Tony Pollard would certainly appreciate. He's got a tendency to lean a bit, which has got to get that cleaned up, but he's arguably the most pro-ready tackle in this class and is definitely a deep one. So I've got Joe Alt going to Tennessee to shore up that offensive line.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, and I've been seeing that a lot in a lot of places. And the fact that Brian Callahan from the Bengals, offensive coordinator, has gone over to them, you can see why they're fortifying the line, because, you know, the Bengals have had a top-of-the-charts quarterback in Joe Burrow, and the biggest issue why we haven't won multiple Super Bowls is probably the protection of Joe Burrow. So I think he's starting from the right spot there.
No doubt.
And, you know, Corey, you brought something else up, too, which I wanted to kind of stray off a little bit. You mentioned how Will Levis is a tough guy, and I treat Burrow the same way. You know, I know he's not your classic tough guy built like that. He's a little thinner, but it's some of those quarterbacks that get themselves in trouble because they're so fearless. Do you have any perspective on that?
Matt Stafford's another one. Yeah, now, of course, the Rams were more talented than, I mean, you know, so we're going to put a plethora of weapons around Matt Stafford in order for him to succeed, but who was in the trenches in front of him? You had your boy, Andrew Whitworth, was one of them. You had guys on that offensive line to keep him upright. So Joe Burrow's as bad an ass as there is in the NFL, you know, and you could see when his injury happened this year, when you could just see the frustration on his face, because he's a warrior. He wants to be out there. He knows better than anybody, yo, I can do this. I can take, I had this team on the doorstep of finally winning that Lombardi Trophy, and I can't do it from the sideline, right? So for me, a guy like Will Levis, and I don't think they're comparable at all in terms of talent. I love Will Levis. I like him. But he's nowhere at all in the galaxy of Joe Burrow. But I think if you have a quarterback that does have that innate toughness, it's going to – we see so many guys now that immediately flush themselves out of the pocket. Jalen Hurts is one of them. You know what I mean? Lamar Jackson, these guys like Josh Allen. I think the reaction now is, let me flush myself out and gain yards on foot, and that is absolutely unequivocally a valuable trait. But it's inarguable, too. You still have to have a guy. These edge rushers now, a lot of them, this isn't 10, 20 years ago, a lot of these defensive ends, they can run a 4.3. They can run a 4.4 40. They're just as fast as you are. So you can't always outrun these dudes. You've got to be able at some point to throw the ball downfield, especially to win in January, and if you're lucky enough, February, which is going to entail standing in there and getting drilled. It's going to happen. So that's something you've got to be able to do. It doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah, and it says something for your teammates, too, when you're a tough quarterback like that and you're willing to take the hits. I think teams want to play harder for their quarterbacks when it's not a guy who's afraid of contact or, you know, rushing out of the pocket at the first sign of distress. When you have a guy who is taking some of the same hits you are in the trenches or, you know, linebacker, running back kind of stuff, I think that's right. Commendable, and NFL players are drawn to that as a leader.
1,000%. I mean, and that's what it is. You've got to have, it's cliche, but it's been said in any huddle I've been in, or even that I've 11 men, one heartbeat. And if you've got a guy that's back there that you know is, I mean, we were talking about it kind of before we came on. Adam Mahomes is going to throw a tantrum if he gets hit. Look at the ref for a flag for some laundry on the field. But you've got to have a guy that is willing to take the heat. You have to. And dudes will go to war for you if you do that, because even the best offensive linemen are going to miss a guy here and there. It's going to happen. So if you've got that guy that's willing, it can take the pressure off of you if you have somebody that's going to, you know, be in there and throw a laser, whether it's complete or not, that's willing to take that lick on the chin.
Yeah, and taking that a step further in Joe Burrow's case, and I know, you know, we're talking draft. I don't want to just make it totally about Burrow, even though it's like my favorite thing to talk about Bengal-wise. He's also one who never points fingers. Like, I've seen guys grossly miss blocks, him getting lit up, and he just gets up, gets ready to call the next play. He's not like, you know, I've seen like Brady and Rodgers call out their offensive linemen when guys make a mistake. You get someone like Burrow who doesn't do that. And in my opinion, that makes him even better of a leader.
That's why he's the type of him, Stafford. Those are the type of guys you. That's why I love that Super Bowl a couple years ago so much. You know, those are the type of guys you root for. It doesn't. I mean, yeah, you can have a feeling about a certain franchise or whatever, but as a fan of the sport, how can you not help but root for those dudes?
All right, let's move on to pick number 8. With the Falcons, I've been hearing rumblings on what they're going to do. I wanted to get your takes on it.
I've got them going with Quinyon Mitchell, quarterback out of Toledo, and cornerback, rather. Atlanta's a team now that's poised to break out in a weaker conference, right? We're in the NFC over here. You guys have the murderer's row. We're just kind of hanging out in the JV conference. You've added Kirk Cousins to go with Bijan Robinson, Drake London, and Kyle Pitts. I mean, they picked up Rondale Moore, Darnell Mooney, who are nice little pieces on the outside. They've invested in their secondary. They gave your boy Jesse Bates, speaking of safety, is a big contract. Richie Grant's been a nice player at safety as well, and you have A.J. Terrell, former All-Pro, on the corner. So if you can find his tag team partner, you've got sort of the final piece of the puzzle, and it's a down class for these elite edge rushers, right? Because Atlanta does need a pass rusher. Desperately, they do. But you don't have that Aiden Hutchinson type in this class, and I'm not quite as sold on Dallas Turner as some guys are, despite him being the popular pick here. Corner is one of the deep spots in the draft, and Mitchell appears, and all signs point to him being the best of the bunch. He put an exclamation mark on it with a phenomenal performance at the Senior Bowl. He checks every box. You've got size for the position at 6 foot, 195 pounds. He's scheme versatile. He can play man or zone coverage. 6 interceptions and 37 PBUs over the last 2 seasons. So you're getting a ball hawk. He's also outstanding in run support. He's willing to come up and make that tackle, which is quality not every corner has, even if you do excel in coverage. Pass rusher might be the bigger need here. You know, with A.J. Terrell already on the roster, and you've got young, unproven players like Arnold Ebiketie and Zach Harrison on the edge, the upside of adding Mitchell here, to me, is too hard to pass up if you're Atlanta.
Yeah, I was thinking they would go for a pass rusher, but you make an excellent case for them taking a corner here. All right, so let's move on to the Bears at 9, and we all thought they would get their Robin to Batman. And from your mock draft, most of the top-notch wide receivers are taken here. What do you think the Bears do at 9 at this point?
If this is the way it plays out, I've got to be in Leiatu Latu, edge rusher out of UCLA. And, you know, I'll throw the disclaimer in. If one of those big three does fall to him, I think that's absolutely the pick, or it's at least the contentious conversation amongst Ryan Poles in the Chicago war room. Of the three, for the record, I can see Odunze possibly being there. In this scenario, you know, as you said, he's not. You add Latu opposite Montez Sweat, who was an awesome midseason pickup for the Bears last year. And, I mean, I guess I get it with Dallas Turner. I guess I can see why guys like him. But to me, Latu's got the best skill set of these edge rushers in this class. And Ryan Poles hasn't exactly been afraid to go a little bit under the radar in terms of what the mocks and everybody think he's going to do. Even as recently as last year, he took Darnell Wright 10th overall. Some mocks didn't have him going the first round at all, and ones that did had him going in the 20s. So Ryan Poles isn't afraid to make those decisions. 23 sacks over the last 2 years for Latu. You're getting a mature, intelligent player who comes equipped with an arsenal, a full arsenal of pass rush moves, where your Dallas Turners and your Jared Verses of this draft still have a little bit of fine-tuning to make. He's got all the instincts you want. He plays with a relentless motor that's disruptive, you know, in the pass and in the running game. He's got that neck injury you hear about, yes, but he's been cleared time and time again. And if you have your doctors look at him and give him the green light, I think he's a home run pick. I love Latu to Chicago at this point. And, you know, you come back with a 48 pick, I think, is when they pick in the second round for the Bears. And then you can go get you that complimentary receiver, whether it's Ricky Pearsall, Xavier Worthy, Malachi Corley, whoever. Fortify that edge rush while you've got the chance to get an elite prospect.
Yeah, and it's proven with the way the college game has gone, you can get quality wide receivers in the second round, third round, pretty much anywhere in the draft. I mean, think of Puka Nacua. But
absolutely.
I definitely agree. If they can't grab an elite wide receiver here, they can certainly get a fairly top-end one in the second round. All right, before we get on to the real exciting picks, the Bengals and the Eagles, what do you think the Jets are doing at 10?
I've got him going Brock Bowers, tight end out of Georgia, and it's been a busy offseason for Joe Douglas, Jets GM. And, you know, look, we all remember what happened with Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, tackle makes sense here, all the sense in the world. But among the moves the Jets have made, you know, they brought in two new bookends of tackle, Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses. Now, both guys are 33 years old right now and have dealt with injuries, yes, but you've got a finite window of opportunity with Aaron Rodgers that you have to capitalize on in that loaded AFC conference that we talk about. And it's nothing against Tyler Conklin, but Bowers puts this Jets offense where it needs to be in terms of weapons for Rodgers to be able to distribute the ball to. We haven't seen a tight end get this much love entering the draft since Kyle Pitts, who went fourth overall in 2020, obviously. Bowers is 6'3", 243, length. He's got a 78-inch wingspan. The best thing about him, or the most appealing, is he's got wide receiver qualities at the tight end positions. He's a big play threat every snap. He's got long speed for a tight end. He can rack up those yak yardage we talk about. And those are things, again, you don't see every day at the tight end position. He runs great routes. He uses that frame to box out defenders. He uses it to his advantage. And he works hard to contribute in the run game as well. So shout out to Breece Hall. He's a dynamic weapon overall for Rodgers and the Jets. He's going to take that pressure off of Garrett Wilson. He's all they have right now on the outside. I mean, they added Mike Williams, which is great, but the addition of Brock Bowers in the middle of the field, stretch that field out, spread the defense out, I think would really open this Jets offense up.
I agree. That's going to be a dangerous pickup, obviously, me rooting against the AFC teams. But we are seeing that in today's NFL. a top-notch tight end is worth its weight in gold. I mean, look at the Kelce Mahomes ride to the top.
Yeah, I mean, even a couple years ago, you had T.J. Hockenson get drafted eighth overall. I mean, they're going higher. That's another one of those possessions where, you know, positions that we talk about where you've kind of seen before you could get by having, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a late 90s, early 2000s tight end here, Chad Lewis for the Eagles, right? Like, that dude was awesome to me as a kid. And I don't think he ever had over 600 yards receiving in a season. Like, he wasn't that great. He wouldn't be anybody right now. You know, he'd make a roster. He'd be a tight end too. But having that guy, that Kelce, you know, that Kittle, the, you know, Dallas Goedert, Darren Waller type, the Hockenson, that helps open up your offense for your quarterback, and it gives you something you can sit down in the middle of coverage and get an easy 8 to 10 yards when you need it.
100%. That's a safety valve. That's help over the middle. That's a young quarterback's best friend. I know Rodgers isn't a young quarterback in this case, but yeah, the tight end position is kind of like the knight in chess. If you don't pay attention to it, it's going to be checkmate.
Absolutely, dude.
Damn, that was a really bad cliche, but I kind of liked it. All right, anyway.
No, it worked. It totally worked.
All right, so listen, this is the part of the show that I've been really looking forward to. Now, I know the Bengals pick 18th and the Eagles pick 22nd, but for the sake of the show to build suspense towards that Bengals pick, I want to get the Eagles pick at 22 first, and sure, then if you can, let's hit the Bengals after that to, you know, build this to a grand finale.
I wouldn't have it any other way, dude, for you and the listeners. It makes all the sense in the world, man. So, at 22nd overall, Philadelphia Eagles select Chop Robinson, edge rusher, out of Penn State. I always tend to differ from Howie Roseman on draft day. If I'm the Eagles GM, I'm going Cooper Jean out of Iowa all day if he's there, which I think he could be. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's back, and Howie seems content rolling with Darius Slay and James Bradbury for another year. I had Jackson Powers-Johnson, center out of Oregon, here until the Haason Reddick trade. Bryce Huff got a nice contract in free agency, and BG's back for a farewell tour. Still got Josh Sweat and Nolan Smith there as well. Second-year guy, but that's not enough for Howie, who goes back to the well here. The Eagles hosted Chop Robinson for a pre-draft visit, and they've got a track record of taking guys that they bring in for those pre-draft visits. Robinson had 2 years at Maryland before transferring to Penn State. The numbers aren't there in the stat sheet, but that's never bothered Howie Roseman. If you look at the guys he's taken in the first round before, he'll draft you based on traits, and Robinson definitely has a great foundation to work with. He's kind of a developmental player, almost like a Brandon Graham, who ironically was the last Eagles first-round pick before Howie took over. And, you know, he could help himself, Robinson, by filling out his frame a bit. He's 6'3", 255 right now. His pass rush moves aren't great just yet, but when you watch him, he's so damn twitchy at the line of scrimmage. He had a monster combine, a 4.4840, a 1.54 10-yard split. He crushed it at Lucas Oil Stadium. And this just reeks to me of a guy, you know, lost a guy to replenish the depth chart for Howie Roseman, which is what he does. You know, two straight defensive tackles in the first round the last 2 years with Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter. And Chop Robinson gives a deep rotation, or keeps a deep rotation, rather, of edge rushers for new defensive coordinator Vic Fangio to work with.
Yeah, and you can't go wrong with those trench picks. You know, defensive tackle, offensive tackle, obviously edge rusher, those, you know, you get quality guys there, you're going to be good and competitive for years.
Absolutely, man. That's what's done it for us.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you guys had one of the best offensive lines in the league for many years, and your pass rush has been deadly, and that's why, you know, you've been to the top of the charts for the last few years, you know, barring last year's breakdown, which I know we talked about earlier, but we're not going to...
Oh, yeah, I could go on for hours.
Yeah, I'm not going to open up bad wounds there. I still believe in the Eagles. All right, so here we are, 18th pick. In my opinion, I think the Bengals can't go wrong. There's pretty much any position they grab here. Obviously, you're not taking a linebacker, a safety, a running back, a quarterback, you know, those things. But pretty much anything on the perimeter or interior line, it feels like you can't go wrong. What do you think the Bengals are going to do with pick 18?
I think I'm going to preface this by saying I think the dream scenario here would be Brock Bowers. And I know Duke Tobin rarely moves up, but if he falls past the Jets at 10, I'm burning the phone lines up, dude. I think that watching Bowers in that Bengals offense with Burrow would be, I mean, just, I don't think it happens, though. I'm going Olu Fashanu, offensive tackle out of Penn State. And it's kind of hard to nail down which offensive lineman with so many jammed up here, teams jammed up that need offensive linemen. You got the Raiders at 13, the Saints at 14, Seattle at 16, and Jacksonville before you guys, I believe, at 17. And they could all go offensive line. You got Fuaga out of Oregon State, who I expect to be gone. J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Fautanu out of Washington, I like a lot here. He kind of could be converted to a guard or projects better at a guard. He's the guy I would really love to put here, but I think he goes to Seattle. So that kind of leaves Olu Fashanu and Amarius Mims out of Georgia. Maybe a Graham Barton out of Duke. But I ended up going with Fashanu here to take the place of Jonah Williams opposite Orlando Brown. And I know you brought in Trent Green on a one-year deal, and if that holds up, you still have Fashanu as a future for Joe Burrow and the Bengals. Now, he's not a standout as a run blocker. He's good. He's solid. But he excels on an island in pass pro. Zero sacks allowed in 2023, which, again, is good news for number nine, right? Fashanu's got smaller hands at the positions, 8.5 for the combine nerds out there, for whatever that's worth to you. But then again, so did Christian Darrisaw, and he's been great for Minnesota since they took him in 2021 in the first round. So, and I'm a Penn State fan in college, and it's been interesting to watch because Fashanu's stock has kind of seemed to drop a bit. And you see this sometimes, and there's, you know, no real reason for it aside from other guys, you know, pre-draft process improve their stock, and some guys just get shuffled down the board as a result of it. So this is something I think Cincinnati could benefit greatly from. You know, Trent Brown, again, that one-year deal could fill in great, and then you have a guy that you can plug and play, you know, for the next 5 to 7 years through the rest of the prime of Joe Burrow, and then you can kind of fill that roster out around him if you don't have a Brock Bowers there. I debated Byron Murphy, defensive tackle out of Texas. He was kind of tempting. You know, I know interior defensive line is an area where you guys could use some help, but there's also options down the board in the second round that you could get there. Johnny Newton out of Illinois, he seems like his stock's starting to fall. I saw a mock that had you guys taking him in the second round. That doesn't mean he's going to be there, but it's an option. He, 6 months ago, looked like he was a lock to be a first-round pick. Now, not so much. I just, with nine missing more games last year, like we're saying, and I know how you feel about Joe Burrow. I know how Bengals fans everywhere feel about Joe Burrow. I know how I feel about Joe Burrow as a football fan. It's smart to try to get as deep as you can in those trenches. And Trent Brown is an older player, and you've got Orlando Brown. To me, if you get those bookends locked down, that is it's an insurance policy pick, to your point. The Bengals really can't go wrong here. There's a nice pocket of players in which you could pull from, and there's really no bad move of the bunch. That's just the route in which I took.
Yeah, and I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to, in my next episode, I'm going to go off on what exactly I'm thinking about doing in the draft, but I really feel that getting a top-notch offensive tackle when there's so many available would be the smartest move. Of course, like you said, if someone like Bowers falls and he can be that much of a difference maker, you can't really pass that up. But, you know, I mean, if you're looking at a top-flight corner, a top-flight defensive tackle, those are things that all could help here, and I wouldn't have a problem with any of that. But if you're thinking of the last 4 years, the 2 years Burrow was healthy, it's AFC Championship and beyond. The 2 years Burrow wasn't, it's not even making the playoffs. So a good idea to invest in that future. You know, Trent Brown isn't a young guy, so to have a guy be able to sit behind him, or if one of those older guys gets injured, to be able to plug in, I think would be the best option for us. So I agree with you 100% on that, Corey.
And that's it. I mean, because there's always the possibility of injury, right? And, I mean, I know that, you know, Jamar Chase isn't going anywhere, and he's as good as there is in the league. You know, T. Higgins, I understand. I know he requested a trade. He's got the franchise tag. But realistically, I don't know, man. Like, are you really going to be upset if you're back with Joe Burrow for another year? Like, come on, dude. You know, where else are you going to go where you have a better quarterback throwing you the ball? I mean, again, I told you before we went on, if I'm starting an NFL franchise from scratch, the quarterback I'm taking above anybody is Joe Burrow. So I understand T. Higgins, I get it. But to your point, there are so many receivers being cranked out in the draft every single year. You can get you a quality guy in the second, third. Puka Nacua was a fifth-round pick, I believe. You can get you a guy at any point. So to me, just filling out that depth chart, like you said, insurance policy for Burrow is the best move. I mean, if I'm looking at the board again, if I'm Duke Tobin, Cooper DeJean, kind of a big nickel in the secondary, he's one of my favorite players in this draft. I wouldn't be mad at all if I'm a Bengals fan and he's the pick. You know, do you maybe one of these edge rushers falls? Say a Jared Verse out of Florida State. You know, I know you've got Hubbard and Hendrickson, but maybe kind of, you know, get you another guy there to build out the depth chart a bit. There's a lot of directions here Cincinnati could go and it play out in your favor. It's kind of not a luxury spot because you never want to be picking in the mid-teens. That means you just barely missed the playoffs. And again, to your point, if Burrow were healthy, you guys would be picking a hell of a lot later. So it's not the ideal spot, but there's not a whole lot of ways you guys can go wrong here.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think we're both in the same spot. You're only a few picks after us. And with so many quarterbacks expected to go early, that makes our picks even more valuable. You know, you knock out 5-6 quarterbacks and all of a sudden, you know, I have a top 12 pick, you have a top 16 pick, for lack of better words.
Right, because, I mean, here we're not doing trades. So, I mean, and there's going to be, I mean, you see, it gets hard doing trades because then you kind of convolute the exercise a little bit. At least that's my opinion. I know it's popular to do them, but the way I look at it is if there is a trade, at least I try to nail down the position if it's not the exact player. You know what I mean? And so I think that there's going to be movement. There's going to be, you know, Minnesota didn't acquire a second first rounder for a reason. I'm pretty sure they're going to move up. These quarterbacks are going to go, J.J. McCarthy, it's Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr. You know, there's always a surprise pick or two in there too, right? Seattle's kind of one of these wonky teams that John Schneider kind of, I don't know what drugs he's on sometimes, some of these picks he makes, but I wish I had some, you know, and it kind of always seems to work out for Seattle in a weird way, but you've got them picking ahead of you. That could shuffle somebody else down the board. So there's really no way of knowing. I just think offensive line's one of those positions, like there's like, it's like receivers to the Ravens in mocks every year. It's kind of like until you know it's secure, it's just easy to mock a certain position to a certain team. And it's like, as long as Joe Burrow keeps getting hurt, it just makes sense to keep putting offensive linemen in Cincinnati.
Corey, I got to say, this has been excellent. I love your knowledge of the draft and the NFL in general. I mean, you're just rattling off general managers, all the transactions that went on in the offseason. How do people find you on social media?
So I'm on Instagram at GreasePolePodcast. Posting has been kind of sporadic lately. I'm also on YouTube as well. Look up the GreasePolePodcast. Subscribe would be greatly appreciated. Feel free to check it out. There's going to be plenty of things coming very, very soon.
That'll do it for this episode. I'd like to thank @BengalsHighlights on Instagram, the best page out there. Really cool highlights, really cool music. Definitely something you should check out. Thank you for listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca, and I'm a Bengals fan for life.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.